This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Sports are such a significant part of American society that even if you don't obsessively follow a team, you've still heard of the legendary names like Bill Russell, Bobby Orr, Ted Williams. But these names, legendary in their own right, are lesser known. Names like Michelle Himmelberg.
You were the only one. You were the first one. You were the oddball. But it didn't feel odd to me because growing up with sports, growing up with, you know, riding, it was just something that I loved to do.
Leslie Visser.
I always played sports, and I told my mother when I was 10 years old that I was going to be a sports writer. Well, at 10 years old in 1963, this was like saying, I am going to the moon.
And Christine Brennan.
If you saw a girl on a playing field in America in the late 60s or early 70s, it was probably likely that she was there telling her brother it was time to come home for dinner. But I was the girl out on the playing field who was playing with the boys.
Well, these women aren't athletes, but they brought athletes and their stories into your homes. Michelle Himmelberg was the first female sports writer to gain access to the San Francisco 49ers locker room. Christine Brennan was the first female sports writer at the Miami Herald. And Leslie Visser, who wrote about the Patriots for the Boston Globe, was the first woman ever honored by the NFL Hall of Fame. They are a few of the pioneering female sports writers who fought for and won equal access to that all-male inner sanctum, the clubhouse locker room. Their stories are told in a new documentary called Let Them Wear Towels, which airs tomorrow night on ESPN. And joining us now is another one of those pioneering women, Melissa Ludke. She's a former reporter for Sports Illustrated. She covered baseball. She also sued for equal access to players in Major League Baseball locker rooms. She grew up in Amherst, Massachusetts, and she joins us now. Melissa, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you.
So the film is just remarkable in taking us into those locker rooms from the perspective of women such as yourself. So, but for people who don't know your story, briefly remind us what first drew you to sports journalism.
Well, I majored in art history. Is that a good answer?
Makes a lot of sense to me, I guess.
I left Wellesley College with a degree in art history, but I had the wonderful circumstance of being seated across the table from Frank Gifford one night, who was then had left the Giants and was one of the announcers for Monday Night Football. And after a night of talking sports with him across that table, he gave me a great compliment. And that was, for a girl, you know a lot about sports. But even more than that, he gave me an invitation that if I happened to be coming down to New York, he'd do a round of introductions for me at ABC Sports. Not wanting to go to graduate school at the time, I thought, what do I know next? And the answer was sports. And so I took him up on that and went down to New York. And as they say, the rest became history.
Became history. Well, let's listen to a little bit more of the documentary, Let Them Wear Towels, because the early history of women sports writers and gaining access to players in the locker room is remarkable. And it's worth reminding ourselves what it was like before the world changed, essentially, in pro sports. So here's a clip, again, from the documentary. And you'll hear in it Leslie Visser. She wrote for the Boston Globes about the New England Patriots. And you'll also hear Jane Gross. She's the first female reporter who covered the NBA. And here's what they described the world was like for female sports writers in the early days.
The credential that I was given to go do my job, to be the beat writer of the New England Patriots, on the credential, it said, no women or children in the press box.
Fenway Park would not let the women into the room where the men reporters ate. They would bring us food on trays on the roof of the old Fenway Park, which was outdoors. So rain or shine, we were eating our food off trays.
Now, Melissa, I have to say, in watching the documentary, Boston doesn't necessarily fare well as a city being friendly to female sports writers. I'll ask you about that more in a second. But do those reflections match your early experiences?
Yes, very, very much so. When I hear their voices, it brings me back to that time very, very concretely. And just to ease your mind, we were talking about the Red Sox. Let's jump to the White Sox for a second.
Okay.
1 year before I end up going to federal court to sue for access that I had been given in my credential. That one September night when I was there with Roger Kahn, the author of The Boys of Summer, as a reporter working with him for Sports Illustrated, I was told that I was the girlfriend of Roger Kahn when I went to sit in the press box, And so this is 1976 when we went after the game to the place where the sports writers went to have their after dinner drinks and the rest. We literally were forced out. I had to leave because I was told that no women were allowed in that room. That's a year before this happens. So, you know, ancient history might be the 1970s eating on the roof of Fenway Park, but contemporary history in terms of my lawsuit was a year before, and this was the way I was treated at Kaminsky Park.
Well, let's talk about how high up the attitudes against women in locker rooms to do their jobs. I mean, it was a matter of being able to do your jobs to get those quotes from the players. Let's talk about how high up the prejudice went against women. Here's former Major League Baseball Commissioner Bowie Kuhn talking about why he didn't think ladies should be in the locker room.
It's not a fair thing for our players. This is an area where they're dressing, and it's an area where we think they're entitled to some reasonable privacy. We don't think it's really fair to the rest of the press, and we also don't think it's fair to a lot of our fans who would have great reservations about this.
So, Melissa, it wasn't fair to the fans, it wasn't fair to the athletes, it wasn't fair to your fellow journalists, it wasn't fair to anyone. It was an abomination, apparently, according to Bowie Kuhn. But tell us what happened in 1977.
In 1977, Bowie Kuhn applied those same principles to banning me from both locker rooms during the 1977 World Series after the Dodger players had actually taken a vote that had affirmed that I had a credential that said I had access to the locker room. And he, in fact, took away that access. He said only he could give it. The team could not. And he did use those excuses. His spokesman told me that the wives had not been consulted on this, and they should be, to which I asked, what other policy have the wives been consulted on? Which was no answer. And the second was that their fear that the children would be ridiculed in their classrooms the next day if I were to enter the locker room. Now, remember, I had been going into NBA locker rooms the entire winter before, because during the winter months, I was covering the NBA. So I knew this didn't make sense. But that was the reality. We tried to negotiate for 4 months. And when those negotiations ended at the same place they began, which was with me banned fully from having equal access, we had to go to federal court.
And you won your court case.
We did, with the judge Constance Baker Motley. And for people who are thinking about race issues today, I think this should be much in their mind. She was an extraordinary lawyer for racial equality. And so she ended up with this case, which was really one of the first landmark cases on gender equality. Hmm. And it's fascinating to know this intersection.
But as we know, legal cases may set a precedent, but they don't necessarily change society overnight. Because there's a moment in the film, Let Them Wear Towels, where one of your colleagues, Robin Herman, mm-hmm. Also a very famous sports writer for the New York Times, she shares some mail that she received from a reader when they discovered she had been given access to pro sports locker room. So here's Robin Herman.
Dear Miss Herman, very polite beginning. Dear Miss Herman, okay. It's hard to address a harlot disguised as a reporter. You cannot do such a thing with impunity. It's wrong, no matter how many women libbers might dumbly applaud it. If there had been any real, real men in that locker room, you would have been kicked out on your prostitutional ass. Surely you shall regret this, and regret it bitterly.
It's so heartbreaking to hear that, Melissa. But let me ask you, what is in that letter? What was the great sin that you were committing in the eyes of sports fans in the 70s and 80s by trying to get the story when the story was in the locker rooms? The story being the players.
Well, there wasn't a sin that we were committing.
But why did people react so strongly?
It was posed that way, by baseball at least. And I think some of the other leagues also tried to posit it, that, in fact, we were immoral in some way for wanting to go into this place. What everyone forgot, and the media did a very bad job of covering, is that we had been prohibited, as Jane said, from eating on the roof. We'd been prohibited at one time from going onto the field to interview the players. We'd been prohibited from going into the press boxes. None of those had to do with nakedness, nudity, sex, whatever you want to put on it. So for baseball to turn it into a morality play worked very well for them in terms of public relations, in terms of the kind of columns they got out of it. For the headline writers, it was a bonanza. Mm. But in terms of really facing what the issue was, which was equal access, we never said we need to go into the locker room. We just said you need to make it equal access for us. If you want the interview somewhere else, you don't want us to see naked players, do it somewhere else. Our issue is a constitutional issue. Yeah. It's not the right to be naked or not naked. It's a constitutional issue. And
well,
that's, yeah.
There was an interesting moment in the documentary where some of the reporters describe how actually disgusting a place a
yes.
pro sports locker room can be, that it's smelly, it's hot, it's humid. It's not exactly, one where you necessarily want to be, but the fact is that's where you were given access to players. But what I kind of come away with in watching this, the documentary, which airs tomorrow, I should say, on ESPN, is that, you know, given that this was the 70s and 80s, it is absolutely a microcosm of society as a whole. And in terms of the seismic shifts that were happening, hard fought, though, in terms of gender equality in the country. I mean, do you see it that way?
Oh, I see it absolutely that way. It cannot exist, in my view, at another time in our nation's history. This was really about a time when we came out of college as women who believed that we ought to be able to use our education in every way that a man could use it. And yet, in every profession, this was found. Mm. You know, these barriers, these blockages, these challenges, in the medical profession, in the legal profession, all of those. Now, Title IX helped us to all sort of open up some of those. But yeah, sure, it's in the context of those times.
We just have a couple seconds to go, but I wonder, fast forwarding to today, granted a lot of the legal hurdles have been cleared, but do you think this issue is resolved? Or do female sports writers still face challenges when it comes to gaining access or even a sense of legitimacy in the eyes of sports fans and managers and players?
I think in the eyes of managers, players, the people they're with every day, if a woman does her job well, I think she gets, the sense of legitimacy from all of those people. But I think in the eyes of the consumers out there, if a woman tries to be too opinionated, if a woman tries to be too judgmental, then the world comes back at her and says, wait a minute, you don't necessarily belong here, being able to make those kind of judgments. So I think we're sort of, we're mostly there. We're mostly there.
But still a little ways to go.
Well, a little ways to go.
Well, Melissa Ludke is a journalist, author, and documentary filmmaker. She's a former baseball writer for Sports Illustrated and was one of the early women to sue for equal access to players. She's featured in the new ESPN documentary, Let Them Wear Towels, which airs tomorrow night on ESPN. Melissa Ludke, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. Thanks for this.
And that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Leave us any comments you want about anything you've heard on the show today at radioboston.org. And join us again on the radio tomorrow for more Radio Boston.